Good evening. My name's Fuxiu. It's nice to see still daylight. Everyone's here in the daylight, which is exciting, even though it's evening. I've been thinking about appropriate response lately, a lot. Probably because of the overall political scenario in our country, all of the responding that's going on a global scale, but also, you know, that's made me think about how I respond to my local community, how I respond to friends and smaller community, people I care about, who are really close to me. And then, you know, most importantly, how I respond to myself, which I think is what this practice helps us look at and explore. Along with an appropriate response and thinking about that, there's this koan in the Blue Cliff record called Mucha's Thieving Phony. And it goes like this. So Mucha asked a monk, "Where have you just come from?" And the monk immediately shouted, "Quats!" in the old Zen tradition. And Mucha said, "I've been shouted at by you once." And the monk shouted again, "Quats!" And Mucha said, "After 3 or 4 shouts, then what?" And the monk had nothing to say. So Mu Chao hit him and said, "What a thieving phony you are." And the verse is really short in this version. There's a verse after this koan, and the verse says, 2 shouts and a 3rd shout. Adepts recognize the opportune moment to change. If you call that riding the tiger's head, the 2 of them would both turn out to be blind men. Who is a blind man? I bring it out for everyone to see. I mean, so for me, the you know, sort of layman's way of summarizing this would be, if you think you know the answer, be careful. Or, you know, am I being honest with myself in my response? Or am I falling into a rut? How am I responding? Is this the way I always respond to this person that I know and love dearly but am very comfortable with? Is this the way I respond when I'm upset because I don't agree with those politics? Or is this the way I respond to an old story about who I am and myself and why I am where I am in my life? You know, am I justifying that? Am I beating myself up for something? Probably. For that old story? Or am I offering an appropriate response? You know, Dogen instructs us, even if you think a teaching is complete and right, when someone tells you a better way, you should change your understanding. So what if you catch yourself responding in the same old way? Can you change your understanding? I think that this practice helps us do that naturally. But I also think it helps us do it consciously by cultivating awareness. So if we're awake enough with ourselves on the cushion and we're noticing how we're responding to those old stories, can we just allow enough room around that to shift and respond differently in a way that's more alive, in a way that doesn't hold on to that old idea? I think it's really hard, I know it is for me, to do that with ourselves. There's all these deeply ingrained relationships we have that go way back to our childhood, obviously. And so there's lots of reasons for why we respond the way we do, but I'm getting ready to shoot a short film. It's gonna be the pilot of a short series that I'm working on. I'm a filmmaker as well as a journalist, so I'm gonna tell a story about the Lower East Side, where I've been covering the people and the community for the last 7 years. But I haven't shot anything in a while, so I'm having all this anxiety about shooting it and about the project and about, is it going to be good enough? I mean, all of this stuff is coming up about, am I good enough to do it? What am I trying to prove? It's all these new people. Why am I still trying to do this? It's just this kind of anxiety around it. I'm very excited about doing it. But when I was writing it, I was awake at night thinking about it, or I would wake up in the night thinking about it, really anxious. Because it's been a while and whatever, all these different reasons. So, it's like that anxiety then leads to, like, what is wrong with me? What's wrong with me? There must be something wrong. Like, why am I having so much stress about this, whatever this is? And I think right there, that's kind of the issue, is when we take whatever that experience is and decide that it's a problem, or push it away, or wish that we weren't having it, or think that there's something wrong because we're having it. So instead, I've been sitting with it and trying not to push it away, with that feeling of that anxiety or that fear or whatever that is, that emotional energy, and allowing it to be there, which is what we can do on the cushion in a much safer space usually than out on the street. But I think by letting that energy, have that experience of that energy and not push it away or hold on too tight to it, is what allows it to shift. I was thinking, I have these problems with this, because my parents didn't give me this much attention and blah, 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 blah. So that's what gives me this problem. And then something just shifted a bit because of my practice, and just a voice came in and said, it's all a problem. This whole thing on earth here, this life that we have, it's a problem. It's a problem for all of us. We're all in it together. We all have problems. They don't magically go away the more you sit on your cushion. Sorry to tell you. If you want to go, I understand. But it's all a problem. It's not just my problem. It's the problem, which in whatever way I experience it is unique. And the way you experience it is unique because we are unique. But the pain or the sorrow or the anger, you know, it's there for all of us to experience, whether we like it or not. And just that sort of space of opening up around it not just being my own little narrow problem. I think other people in the world have had anxiety. Has been helpful. I think if we're just not paying attention and we don't look closely enough at it, then we really limit ourselves. And if we're able to look at why are we responding often to me? Why do I respond? Why is that response often, you know, a defense about why it's not enough, I'm not enough, or why am I rejecting that sort of imperfect self as if there's some magic self I'm supposed to be? And that if I just sit harder, or if I make more films, or if I make more money, or if I get more attention, that'll fix everything and the problems won't be there. The common problems. There's a writer named Adam Phillips, and he wrote an essay called Against Self-Criticism, and he points out that self-criticism and the self as critical are essential to our sense, our picture of our so-called selves. Nothing makes us more critical, more confounded, more suspicious or appalled, or even mildly amused than the suggestion that we should drop all this relentless criticism, that we should be less impressed by it, or at least that self-criticism should cease to have the hold over us that it does. Or as Franz Kafka used to say, there's only one thing certain, and that is one's own inadequacy. It's actually quite zen, right? So I've been taking the PATH class this year with Roshi, which I hadn't taken before. And we're studying the Eightfold Path in relationship to citizenship. And one of the books we're reading is this really nice compilation of interpretations of the Eightfold Path written by contemporary female teachers. They each take one of the limbs and kind of talk about it in this very contemporary way. But it starts with the Four Noble Truths, which is where everything in Buddhism starts. And in the introduction, it's by Byakuren Judith Rager. She tells a story from the Buddha about the first noble truth, that there is suffering in human life, or what Buddhists call dukkha. But she says that life is suffering or life is pain is not quite the right understanding of dukkha. And it can result in a misinterpretation of Buddhism as being nihilistic or negative, or, you know, life's just one giant problem, so just there's no point. Just get over it. Life sucks and then you die. She says that dukkha literally translates as du, which is apart from, and ka, or akash, which translates as space, implying a sense of being apart from the spacious, the perfect, and the complete. She says, in this way, dukkha conveys the deepest anguish and dilemma of the self. We interpret ourselves in a state of separation from the whole, and the sense of separated self is the beginning of the misunderstanding of life, the beginning of our feelings of alienation and despair, that we're somehow separate, and so it's a problem. Those are my words. And so she translates dukkha not quite as suffering, but more as dissatisfaction. And says when we sit with ourselves, we can observe our thoughts, and it can be quite shocking to see all the never-ending dissatisfactions throughout our day, just from morning to night. And of course, they range in, you know, potency. But this idea of instead of saying, I'm angry, anger is arising, just that difference has been really helpful for me. It's that experience that we all have in our own way while we're here in this relative world, and allowing ourselves to experience it instead of pushing it away, you know, just noticing it. For me, that's the pain. It's helpful. It doesn't make it go away. But if you don't try to push it away, it's much easier. It's much more agreeable somehow. Shunryo Suzuki says, if you're brave enough to throw yourself into Zazen for any intense period of time, a little bit of understanding will help your stubbornness when you're clinging to an idea about yourself or your problems. Almost all the problems you create because of your stubborn mind will vanish. If you have even the smallest understanding of reality, your way of thinking will change completely, and the problems you create will not be problems anymore. But it is also true that as long as we live, we will have problems. So we don't practice Zazen to attain some big enlightenment that will change our whole being or solve all our problems. That is not the right understanding. So for me, it's just a big constant practice of being comfortable within the pain, the anger, the sickness, the sorrow, the death. It doesn't mean I enjoy it. It's more of an acceptance of it. It doesn't mean I'm clinging too tightly to it either. I think how we experience these facts of life is we do have a say in that. And I think that's why we are brought together in certain aspects, why we're attracted to literature and art and journalism and music and politics, because it's this unique expression of things that we all commonly experience. And I think it's not fair to beat ourselves up for feeling like there's something wrong with us because we're suffering, because we're having a problem. Or to beat ourselves up, it's just, you know, allow it to be there when you're sitting with it. You know the saying, if you change the way you look at things, the things you look at change? I found that to happen on the cushion. And in the Eightfold Path, in this introduction, she says the Buddha used a number, 83, which could be 1,000 or an infinite number, to quantify our human problems, the never-ending disappointments within our mind of complaint. And she offers a story from the Buddha. A farmer came to the Buddha and laid out all his problems. The farmer hoped the Buddha, as a wise man, would help him resolve some of his problems. The Buddha said, I can't help you. And the astonished man said, what do you mean? The Buddha said, everyone has problems. In fact, everyone has got all 83 problems, and there's nothing you can do about it. If you fix one problem, another will pop up. There's nothing you or I or anyone else can do about it. The man became furious. I thought you were a great teacher, he shouted. I thought you could help me. What good is your teaching then? And the Buddha said, well, maybe it will help you with the 84th problem. And the man said, what is the 84th problem? The Buddha said, you don't want to have any problems.